When I think of the word exposure, there are a couple of things that come to my mind. The first is being from farther north, where it gets colder and stays colder longer. The first thing I think about exposure is making sure your skin is covered, because you get out in the cold and you stay out in the cold for too long and you get frostbite. It's dangerous. I also think about that same thing because of people I live with who, well, they have to be careful of the sun. Sunshine is a dangerous thing to my family. The other thing that comes to mind is, photography. Especially, you remember back, most of you are old enough that you remember back in the day when you went to the store and you bought this little canister of stuff called film. And you took the film and you carefully placed it in the back of the camera, and then you took pictures. And when you would hit the button, the lens would open, the shutter would open, and it would expose that film in the back of the camera to the light that would imprint on it what was seen on the other side of the camera. You would expose the film. And then you would, when you got done with that roll of film, you'd put it back in a little canister and you'd take it to the grocery store or to the pharmacy or somewhere, and they'd send it off, and 5 to 7 days later, you'd get back your pictures. Well, in the meantime, they had to expose that film again. They would take it into a dark room and they would put some chemicals on it, and then they would shine light through it, and it would hit this special paper. And after that paper was exposed, they would run it through some chemical baths, and eventually you would get a paper picture that had been exposed. Magic. No, it wasn't magic, Kim. I'm curious. Okay. Close.
Now, how did you know that was me?
I just knew. At least, to the best of my ability, my limited knowledge, that is how pictures were made. And it was all through exposure. Now, when Jesus was on earth, we could say that he was exposing us to God. And it's kind of like having the film and the photo paper that have been exposed that showed us who God was. Now, the problem was the religious leaders of Jesus' day treated it more like skin that needed to be protected from the elements, the sun or the cold or something else. And, or possibly it was like the time that I had a camera that every once in a while it wouldn't advance the film like it was supposed to. And you had to carefully open the back of it so you didn't ruin too many of the frames on the film. And you had to get it back on the little gears and the cogs and everything and shut the back. That's how the religious leaders treated Jesus. Actually, that's how they treated God in a lot of ways. They didn't want too much of him to be exposed to the public. But Jesus had shown, and Jesus had stated for a period of a few days what it was, or who he was, that he was Yahweh from the beginning of this interaction, when he says that he is the one who will give the waters that will flow for a river of life, to when he says that he is the light of the world, and last week when he says that he is the truth and the Son of God, Jesus is making it clear that he is showing us God. And so this morning, we're going to look at what is the end of Jesus' interactions on or at the temple for the Feast of Sukkot, or the Feast of Booths or Tabernacles. And if you want to turn there, we're going to begin at John chapter 8 and verse 44. I know it's an interesting spot to pick up, but it's where I'm going to pick up. So, because I could have read the whole chapter to get where we are, and we had to start somewhere. Jesus, or John, begins with Jesus saying, you are of your father the devil, and you do the desires of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. Whatever he speaks is a lie. He speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I speak the truth, you do not believe me. He who is of God hears the word of God. For this reason you do not hear them, because you are not of God. The Jews answered and said to him, do we not rightly say that you are a Samaritan and have a demon? Jesus answered, I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. But I do not seek my glory. There is one who seeks and judges. Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death. The Jews said to him, now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died, and the prophets also. And you say, if anyone keeps my words, he will never taste death? Jesus answered, surely you are not greater than our father Abraham, who died. The prophets died too. Whom do you make yourself out to be? Jesus answered, if I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say, he is our God. And you have not come to know him, but I know him. And if I say that I do not know him, I will be a liar like you. But I do know him and keep his word. So the Jews said to him, you are not yet 50 years old, and you have seen Abraham? Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was born, I am. Therefore, they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. This is a passage, and it speaks of two different exposures. And we need to examine those two exposures this morning. The first of those is that Jesus is going to expose who the father of this crowd that is gathered around him is. Now, we might ask, who is your father? And we would ask that if we wanted to get a clue to who somebody was. Now, especially if you have lived in a community all of your life, and you kind of know somebody, but you kind of don't, you might say, who is your father? Thinking that you could place them based upon their father, and that you would know some things about them because of who their father was. And Jesus says, I know who your father is. Now, the Jews were saying that Abraham was their father. And technically, if you followed their lineage back, and most of them could trace their genealogy all the way back at least to Abraham. Well, to one of the 12 sons of Jacob, and therefore they could really trace it back to Abraham. And they could look and they could say, this is our family tree. This is our genealogy. And they would say, Abraham was our father. And speak of that in two different ways. Abraham was their father in saying that physically, through birth, they could trace their way back to Abraham. But they were also saying, spiritually, if you look at the religion, if you look at what we believe and what we practice, they would say Abraham is our spiritual father. Because he was the father of the nation of Israel, and it was to him who God exposed himself and made promises about the nation of Israel. And so they could say on two different levels, Abraham was their father, and Jesus looks and said, Abraham is not your father. You think spiritually that Abraham is your father, but your father is not Abraham. Now, that would have been somewhat offensive. And hence the reason in a little while we'll see that they call Jesus a Samaritan or demon-possessed. But because they did not take it lightly when he said that Abraham is not your father. They took a lot of pride in being descendants of Abraham. Rather, Jesus looks at them and says, no, your father isn't Abraham. Your father is the devil. Your father is Satan. Your father is, well, he is the one who from the beginning of history as we know it has set himself as opposed to God. That's your father. Spiritually speaking, that is your father. And he goes on and he says, I can tell you that's your father, and there are some reasons I can tell you that. One, well, your father is the father of lies. You guys are lying about something, several things. And because of that, your nature comes from your father, who is a liar. He's been a liar from the beginning, and lying is his native tongue. He's one of those beings that if they say something, you prove to yourself that he's wrong because you know you can't believe it. Jesus says to them, your father is Satan, who is the father of lies. In fact, more than likely what Jesus is pointing to is back to the creation story. To creation, back in Genesis chapter 3, God has created Adam and Eve. He's put them in the garden to take care of the garden. And Satan comes to Eve and says, did God really say that if you eat of that fruit, you're going to die? He's making an accusation, but it's also a lie. Because then he says, God knows that you're not going to die. And the day you eat of that fruit, you're going to become like God. He's making some accusations and he's lying. He's lying about the character and the nature of God, because what he's saying is God's holding out on you. God doesn't want what's best for you. God doesn't care about you. And so he's lying to you. Your father is the father of lies. And then he takes it a step further. If it wasn't enough to talk about the fact that they may be misrepresenting the truth, because there were a lot of things they said about Messiah, and Jesus met all of the criteria to be the Messiah, but yet they were saying that he couldn't be the Messiah, in large part because they didn't want to give up their power and their prestige. But then he takes it a step further. Not only is your father the father of lies, but you're showing your father's character because you're trying to kill me. Murder. Your father is a murderer. And again, you go back to the story of creation. You go back to the story of the garden. And even though Satan doesn't come out and murder Adam and Eve on his own, his purpose is their destruction. His purpose is to deceive them, to have them commit long-term death on their own. He wants to kill them. And to take it a step further, it's likely Jesus could also be referring to the story of Cain and Abel. You remember the story of Cain and Abel, the two of the first children of Adam and Eve, where Cain takes his brother, gets his brother to go out into the field, and he murders him. In fact, God tries to get Cain to not kill his brother, warning him that evil is right at the door, but yet he murders his brother. Satan, from the beginning, has been a murderer. And it's that he knows his doom is coming, and his desire is simply to take as many of God's created beings with him as possible. He wants to take as many people down as he can. And then Jesus simply looks to authenticate the indictment. He said that they are who they are. And if you need to authenticate that, you simply look at what transpires after Jesus makes the statement. Well, then they accuse him of being a Samaritan and having a demon. Now, to you and me, calling somebody a Samaritan sounds like a good thing, because we've read the account from Luke of the Good Samaritan. And we think about the Good Samaritan. We have to remember that story. That would have been considered an oxymoron, a Good Samaritan. There was not such a thing in the eyes of the Jews. The Jews looked down on the Samaritans. The Samaritans were some of the northern tribes who'd already done a lot to adulterate the worship of Yahweh. And then they were taken captives by the Assyrians, and the Assyrians had some problems with God bringing judgment in that country after the Assyrians took control. And so they sent a few of the people of the northern tribes back, the priests, to teach people how to worship. And the worship continued to get watered down and adulterated. And then after the southern tribes had been taken captivity into Babylon, some of those northern tribes had tried to interfere with the rebuilding of Jerusalem and the rebuilding of the temple. And there had grown some very bad blood, to the point where it said that the northern tribes defiled the temple in Jerusalem at one point in time, and to retaliate, the Jews went and destroyed the temple that the northern worshipers, the Samaritans, had built at Mount Gerizim, and it just continued, bad blood between the two. Now, they got along and worked. They did a few things, but there was always this animosity. And anytime you could bring it up, you did. So for the Jews, those who had heard Jesus and kind of believed him, who now are starting to turn their backs on him, to look at him and call him a Samaritan is a slur as big as you could get. There wasn't a lot worse that they could say about him. And then they said maybe he has a demon. That would have been about as bad as calling him a Samaritan, because to be demon possessed was to be out of your mind and out of control and doing the will of Satan. That was their belief. That was their understanding. And so when they're doing this, you simply look at what Jesus has said about them. You are children of the father of lies, and they are simply they are authenticating what he's just said. And it's going to get even worse as the next 6 months progress in the life of Jesus, and it will end where they bring him to a trial, and they have to bring in false witnesses to try to find a reason to condemn Jesus. They're going to lie about it. There's another form of authentication that takes place, and that is when they stoop down to pick up stones. There were stones in the area of the temple, and they were bending down. They were going to pick up these stones, and they were going to kill Jesus by clobbering him with stones repetitively until he died. And they were going to do this on a charge of blasphemy. And if you go back, you study the scriptures of Israel, you find that that would have been the proper means of taking a blasphemer and dealing with their sins. And so what Jesus is saying when he says that he is God, he is one with God, well, that would have been blasphemy. Except for the fact that it's true. And in fact, Jesus makes this grand statement. It's one of four times. There are four state times that Jesus makes this statement that it very much looks like he's making a claim to be God. When he says, I am. And in fact, in this case, he says, before Abraham was, I am. Before Abraham was born, I am. Before Abraham came into being, I was there. I am. And they thought it was blasphemy. And again, if it wasn't just taking up stones here, you look forward in the life of Jesus and you come to the point of the crucifixion. Which again, it hasn't happened yet. It's still 6 months away. But they have already decided. They have already made up their mind that they are going to do whatever it takes to take Jesus out. Because they will not accept him. And Jesus exposes them as children of Satan. The other exposure is Jesus naming his father. Jesus named the father of the Jews, and now he's going to name his father. And it really comes in answer to the Jewish question. The Jews ask a question: whom do you make yourself out to be? And Microsoft Word didn't like it when I typed that, when I put that in. They thought I should just say who. But it's whom. Whom do you make yourself out to be? Jesus, who are you trying to pretend you are? Jesus, who do you claim to be? And Jesus says, well, I'm not a liar. Said, if I didn't claim to be who I was, then I would be a liar. If I tried to do what you're asking me to do and claim to be somebody less than who I am, I would be a liar. And Jesus says to them, I can't do that. I am not a liar. There is not a lie in me. And so he says, I am the one who hears and glorifies the Father. And by the way, he is our God. My Father is the one you claim that we worship. I worship him because I do what he asks me to do. I worship him because I speak the truth. You attempt to worship him, but you are not worshiping him. But he is our God. The one that called Abraham, he is my Father. And then he makes this grand statement that before Abraham was, I am. And in the Greek, it's the words ego eimi, I am. And it wasn't that that was necessarily an unfamiliar way to say something. You know, it would be similar to us saying, I am, and then you simply say something after, I am here. Except for the fact that it was used by the translators of the Hebrew Bible into Greek in several places to speak primarily of God, of Yahweh, the covenant God of Israel. But more than likely, Jesus was saying this name not in Greek, not that he was saying ego eimi in the temple courts. But that was the best way John could translate what he said, because probably what he said was Yahweh. Who are you making yourself out to be? Yahweh. And this was a name, the way that they believed it, they didn't want to misuse God's name, and so they didn't say it. In fact, there's written evidence that likely it was only said once a year by the high priest to another high-level priest, probably either one of the next high priest, his son, or one of the other priests of great stature. They would whisper quietly on the inside of the temple, past where even the men of Israel could go, into the holy, not the holy of holies, but the holy place. And in there, once a year, the high priest would pronounce the name to another priest for fear that they would misuse the name of God. And even today, many Jews won't say the name Yahweh. They won't pronounce the tetragrammaton, the four letters. And in fact, in a lot of Jewish writing today, even if they use the word God, they'll write G and they'll put a dash and then D, because they don't want to misuse the name of God. And it's likely that Jesus, standing in the temple courts, whispered the name. Well, didn't whisper the name. Spoke it out loud and clear. In the presence not just of another priest, but of all the people. Before Abraham was, I am. And Jesus is claiming not just to be the Son of God at this moment, but to be God himself. Because for someone to be claiming that before Abraham was, he was, well, the Jews make understanding of this. They think back. Abraham lived about 2,000 years ago. Jesus, you're not even 50 years old yet. 50 would have been a good round number. It wasn't that Jesus was even close to 50, but they look at Jesus, you're not even 50 years old yet. Abraham lived 2,000 years ago, Jesus. How can you say that before Abraham was, you are the I am? And there are two ways that this could be looked at. One, Jesus could be claiming that he is really, really old. Or two, he could be claiming that he is one with God. And I'll give you two guesses as to which one it is. Jesus is not claiming that he is really old. He is claiming to be God. And there are several passages of Scripture, three of them just quickly here, that Jesus might be referring to. One of them is Exodus chapter 3, verse 14, where God identifies himself to Moses as, "I am who I am, and I am has sent you." Where God says, "I am." We can look forward, though, to two passages from the book of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 41 and verse 14. It says, "Who has performed and accomplished it, calling forth the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, am the first and with the last." And here it is, "I am He." Which in our English word, English, that's four words. In the Hebrew, it's one. Yahweh. I am. Another one is Isaiah chapter 43, verse 13, where it says, "Even from eternity, I am He, and there is none who can deliver out of my hand. I act, and who can reverse it?" Before the beginning, from eternity, I am. And Jesus says, "Before Abraham was, I am." And in case you wonder which of the two Jesus was claiming, the Jews didn't have any question. The Jews didn't need two guesses to understand what Jesus was saying. In fact, that's why they pick up stones and they try to stone him. Because they understand that he is claiming, he is answering their question, "Whom do you make yourself out to be?" And Jesus says, "God. Yahweh. I am the I am." Jesus was claiming, Jesus was exposing, Jesus was showing us what it means to God, and in no more uncertain terms could God have said that than what he says in the temple when he says, "Before Abraham was, I am." While Moses and Elijah were only allowed to see a small portion of God, they only got to see the backside of God. Isaiah was allowed to see him seated on the throne of heaven, and it's not clear how much of God Isaiah actually saw, and it was only momentary. He only got to see him for a brief moment. On the other hand, in the temple for Sukkot, those who heard Jesus had seen him for a couple of days and listened to him teach for several days. And then if we add into the fact that this is 2 or 3 years into the ministry of Jesus, they probably have heard Jesus and seen Jesus multiple times, and they've had interactions with him up to this point. And therefore they had to decide what they were going to do with Jesus. Do they accept who he is, or didn't they? We have to decide who Jesus is. Do we accept who he claimed to be, or don't we? Many of them did not, and so they rejected him and tried to kill him. An action that they will only accomplish when he is ready to lay down his own life. Paul Barnett, in his commentary on John the Shepherd King, writes and says, "Inevitably, therefore, we are forced to assess the truth and the goodness of God, and consequently, to examine our own values and willingness or otherwise to come into the light. His challenge is ethical and moral, and penetrates deeply. Exposing not only our deeds, but also our motives. To retreat from the circle of light surrounding him is to back deeper into the darkness and to allow the darkness within to remain. Have you accepted him? If not, will you accept him today, or will you, like so many in his day, reject him? There's only two choices. Choose life. Let's stand as we continue to worship this morning.